Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio. And how the tech are ya? You know, listeners who have been tuning in to Tech Stuff for a while know that I haven't really been terribly enthusiastic about the metaverse. Whatever that may end up being. I think the main issue for me is that I recognize how that, you know, we're very early on in the hype cycle. Like, we're on that steep climb. We haven't rounded the peak of hype yet and started to go down the, like, the slope of realization of what the reality is actually going to be. And I think until we start going down the other side, I'm just seeing too many opportunities for folks to get taken advantage of, either on purpose or, you know, just coincidentally. But that means that, you know, I'm focusing on the near term. That's really what has been concerning me. Clearly, the metaverse is coming, whether I want it to or not. So maybe I need to take a moment to really think about what that's going to look like once it has arrived. You know, to know that, yes, the road to get there is going to be a bumpy one. But that doesn't mean that the destination isn't worth going to necessarily. So to kind of help me get out of my, you know, blinders, to get out of that hyper focus I have on sort of the issues right now, I invited Pete Morrison onto the show. Now, Pete is the chief commercial officer at Bohemia Interactive Simulations. And Pete has been working in the military simulation game, pun intended, for nearly two decades. And I wanted to first get an understanding of what he and Bohemia Interactive do, and then sort of transition to talk about the concept of the metaverse, because what Pete does in many ways serves as the foundation for what we will see in a fully realized general-purpose metaverse. So what follows is my conversation with Pete. I hope you enjoy it. Pete, I want to start off by just saying thank you for joining Tech Stuff. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. And I can't wait for us to talk about simulations and what Bohemia Interactive does. But I really want to start off just by saying, how did you get into this world? Did you come at it from like sort of a video game fan perspective and then develop that into a career? Was it something that kind of evolved at the same time as your studies? What's your personal journey story?
Right. So I started out as a gamer, I guess, in the late 90s. And discovered pretty quickly that I was having more fun creating the games than I was having playing them. And my mum actually got me a book on programming when I was still at high school, and I was using the Commodore 64 or Commodore 128 or whatever we had, and I was kind of starting to build these computer games. And it was a domain that I fell in love with from a very early age. And then later on, I joined the army. Again, thanks to my mother. I was actually intending to be a plumber, but my mum pushed me in the direction of the Australian Army. They put me through university where I did computer science, and I was involved in bigger game developments there. And then in the Army, in the Australian Army, I was actually in charge of people who did simulation. And I was one of the people in the very early days, it wasn't just me, who had the idea that we could apply computer games for military training, specifically collective tactical training. And I started working with VBS, Virtual Battle Space, which is the product created by Bohemia Interactive Simulations. I've been involved with that since about 2004, and I've been with Bohemia Interactive ever since I left the Army in 2005. So as a gamer, I've had a very rewarding career.
Wow. And for those who may not remember the 90s, some of my listeners are young enough where they didn't experience them. Like that was right around the era where we started to see the mod space really take off. You know, you started to see games in like the Doom and Quake spheres, where people started to create level editors and entire mods of the game that just completely transformed the game. In fact, some games that emerged out of that era started off as a mod of a previous game. So was that kind of the world you were in when you first started kind of tinkering with this stuff?
Yeah, exactly. And so older people like myself would remember Operation Flashpoint, which came out in 2001. And a big modding community formed around this game. In fact, one of my best friends was one of the hackers. He later became my business partner, who pulled apart the file formats and started to build some of the level editors for Operation Flashpoint. But I ran a modding site called the Operation Flashpoint Editing Center. I'd like to think that I was a little bit famous online. It was pretty big, and we had staff running that, and it was really, really enjoyable. I loved Operation Flashpoint, modifying that computer game. It almost cost me my college degree because I was spending so much time in that computer game. But it was that same game engine that we took back to the military, you know, years later, that same Operation Flashpoint based engine. It's called Real Virtuality. And I initially hired, when I started the business in 2005 or so, the people that I knew from the modding community. Like, I knew a pizza delivery person in Seattle, and he was a really good scenario creator and mod editor. And I actually brought him to Australia to work as one of our initial employees. And that's where I went for my first workers, the people who knew the computer game. So, yeah, my career and my business was a testament to the power of the modding community that's only got stronger since then.
And you sort of touched on it already, but can you tell us a little bit more about exactly what Bohemia Interactive Simulations does? Like, what is their mission? And you know, tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that's been created through there.
Right. So Bohemia Interactive Simulations is a very interesting company. And to go back to the start, we were an offshoot of Bohemia Interactive Studio that created that Operation Flashpoint computer game. Mm-hmm. Since then, they've created many big hits, so to speak. The Armor series, DayZ. DayZ was huge for them, which is a zombie game created by Dean Hall. That was also based upon the same engine. And there was an Australian, it wasn't me, an Australian gentleman who had the idea of building this first military product based upon Operation Flashpoint. And I was in the military at the time, actually left the military when I saw the potential of that technology and I wanted to get on board. And we started to build a version of Operation Flashpoint that was specific for the military training. And it's not training a soldier how to use a rifle or how to drive a tank. It's really training them how to think and putting them into scenarios where they can play out a training vignette to draw out learning points. Now, when you see the soldiers using this computer game, I'm not technically allowed to say playing, but they're playing the game. But they're playing the game. It looks like they're playing Call of Duty from an outside observer. But what they're doing is navigating, communicating, thinking, making decisions, making mistakes in a very safe, cost-effective environment. And the idea is to reduce the amount of time they need to spend training in the field, teach them lessons that they might otherwise learn in a more dangerous environment, potentially even in theater. And computer games have been fantastically successful in this particular type of role. And so today, Bohemia Interactive Simulations is a much bigger company. When I started, I was the second employee. We now have 320, 330 staff in, I think, six or seven studios around the world. We provide software to the US Army, the US Marine Corps, the UK Ministry of Defense, pretty much all of NATO now. There are hundreds of thousands of soldiers trained each year using VBS, which is based entirely on originally a computer game, which we've modified heavily over time. I have to say, compared to Call of Duty or Battlefield, it's sort of boring because you don't want soldiers to be able to jump in the air, to jump over, you know, rocket launched rockets that are coming at them. You want them to be only able to move at a certain speed. You want them to be fatigued. You want them to be a little bit inaccurate. You don't want them to be able to snipe at 400 meters at a moving target. In the real world, that's very hard to hit. But overall, we're quite unique in what we do. We were the first company to really branch into this. And today, we continue to win contracts. We've updated our engine multiple times, our rendering engine multiple times, to keep it consistent with AAA quality. And yeah, we're used all over the world. So I'm very proud of what Operation Flashpoint has become. My favorite computer game, the fact that we're still using elements of that original engine is pretty amazing.
That is phenomenal. And I love this idea of being able to use a virtual environment to simulate things that that soldiers will potentially actually encounter in the field, but in a way that is safe and replicable so that you can make mistakes without the obviously real world heavy consequences that come with making those mistakes when you're actually deployed, and being able to learn in that sense and be able to actually understand the consequences of certain actions. I assume also that as since you've been doing this for more than a decade and a half, that that things have changed quite a bit in the way that militaries conduct various operations, everything from updated equipment to, you know, the different kinds of theaters that soldiers find themselves deployed in. Have you seen a pretty dramatic shift over those years, or has it been fairly steady?
Certain things have changed and certain things have sort of stayed the same. So if you look at a soldier's basic training tasks, shoot, move, communicate, those are very similar to what it was even 20 years ago when I was in the Army. The theaters that we operate, the equipment has changed dramatically and the capabilities of the equipment. For example, UAVs. I mean, you might be seeing some of the footage coming out of Ukraine. You know, there are UAVs everywhere, drones everywhere. Mm-hmm. And this is a fundamental change in the way that our forces operate. It's affected doctrine. It's affected a lot of things. And so we've been doing a lot of work to simulate those types of devices and even experiment with those types of devices within VBS, allowing soldiers to figure out how do we work this new equipment into our tactics, techniques, and procedures. So yes, there's been a change in equipment. The basic doctrine hasn't changed a lot. Infantry soldier still does what an infantry soldier does. And then when it comes to the locations where we're operating, what we heard very strongly about 2012 was that the military wanted a whole earth experience. They didn't want a level. They didn't want a map. They wanted to go anywhere on the planet at a moment's notice. And in 2012, that was pre-Star Citizen, pre-No Man's Sky, the idea of having an entire procedural planet that you could just go anywhere on that planet and immediately start training or playing that was very early days. So we actually invested in that in our VBS Blue engine, and we built a game engine that supported that. So within VBS 4, which is our current release, you can go to Africa, you can go to Europe instantly, and there's quite a good representation of that part of planet Earth out of the box. And of course, in the gaming space, and yes, I still play a lot of computer games, this has become commonplace. I mean, the latest Star Citizen drops are amazing, that the technology they have for going to different planets. And what's changing now is access to the cloud. So we have a lot more different data sources that we can pull from down into the game to create higher fidelity environments quicker.
Yeah, I would argue we're still in a pre-Star Citizen world, but maybe that's because I'm waiting for the full game to finally
be a thing. Have you played it recently?
I have not, but I've also been that kind of person who is like, how many years have I been hearing about this? I know that there have been releases of significant content. It's one of those where, as someone who covers tech and games occasionally, there tends to be this certain game makers have tendencies to really drive up the expectation, not just of what you're going to get, but when you're going to get it. And Star Citizen, I shouldn't just, target, because it's by far not the only one. I can think of one game maker in particular who has quite the reputation for driving up expectation and then perhaps under delivering. But getting back to this, I wanted to ask a little bit more to kind of get the sense of the scope of the simulations that we're talking about here. Like, typically, how many people can one of these simulations support simultaneously?
So right now we are typically servicing what they call battle simulation centers. Mm-hmm. These are everywhere. Mm-hmm. US Army has 87 of them, I think, and they look like a huge computer lab and they're full of soldiers. And it's not just desktop PCs. There's also tank simulators and aircraft simulators in these massive warehouses where they train. So typically 250 is the maximum number that we would put into a single simulation. And that's each soldier playing from the first person perspective, just like in Call of Duty. We support 2,000 to 3,000 artificially intelligent units in addition in our current construct. But as I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later, once we move towards the military metaverse, we're going to see some dramatic changes there. But right now, that's about what we're doing.
And that's still, I mean, anyone who's played any like multiplayer online, like first person shooter games would understand that 250, that's no small shakes. That's pretty impressive. I mean, I know a lot of people who play some of the games where when they first come out have support for maybe 100 or more, maybe up to close to 200 simultaneous players, but they often then are the targets of a lot of criticism because there tends to be a drop in performance. Obviously, when you're talking about products that are meant to help soldiers train, that drop in performance that's not acceptable, because you need to be able to have that tool be dependable and usable for that purpose. So to that end, I'm curious, what are, do you happen to have some idea about kind of the back-end systems that are running this software? Like, how would you compare that to, say, gaming rigs today? Or is it, because we're talking about militaries, are we talking about, much lower end but robust computer systems?
Now, I'm very proud that we have forced militaries all around the world to buy gaming PCs. I'm certainly half joking. We use everything that a modern graphics card provides. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of our procedural generation capability, which means kind of automatically creating a higher fidelity virtual environment than the data kind of gives you, mm-hmm. automatically putting in trees and grass. Most of us have heard about procedural generation now. That requires a modern graphics card. Mm-hmm. So we take advantage of whatever the customer has. And I recommend that the customer upgrade to, at least a 2080 NVIDIA graphics card, for example. We are working on the Vulkan port right now. If anyone's not heard of Vulkan, you'll hear about it shortly. It's the new OpenGL. It's a really exciting graphics library that a lot of games are porting to at the moment. Gives a lot of really powerful capability to these game engines. So we do not recommend that the military use what they traditionally had for simulation, which wasn't gaming tech. Mm-hmm. Gaming technology has just progressed in leaps and bounds. And there was a time, I think it was in the early 2000s, when Silicon Graphics was delivering kind of better hardware for gaming to the US military than was available in the game space. That's completely different now. And almost all of the big flight simulators that I know of, they're using NVIDIA XYZ. And in the gaming space, we're recommending NVIDIA gaming cards as opposed to the professional cards, which is good because they're getting cheaper. We generally try and make sure our software will run well on anything made in the last 5 years, just like a normal computer game. So we don't want to force our customers to spend millions of dollars on thousands of new PCs, but we do expect our customers to stay current.
We've got a lot more to come, and we'll be back after we take this quick break with more conversation with Pete Morrison of Bohemia Interactive Simulations. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
LASIK LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
When VR was first starting to become a thing, we saw some early, very proprietary approaches to VR. Then, because the VR hit this hype cycle and wasn't able to live up to the hype in the eyes of a lot of people, there was a dramatic drop in interest. And it got to the point where people who were dedicating their work to VR suddenly found no support, from financial institutions to academic institutions. And they turned to the video game sector in order to kind of pick and choose things that enabled them to continue their work in VR. So you started hearing about people using all sorts of things, like even consumer tech, like the Microsoft Kinect became an element that VR researchers were interested in. The Wii, the Wii actually was enormously important. Yeah. So it's great to see that like there are these parallels where you might start off in this very proprietary closed garden approach, which obviously there are pitfalls to that, right? Because if the company that makes that thing goes in a different direction or goes away, you're stuck with a system that no longer has support. It can go obsolete. Whereas when you pivot to using technology that is marketed not just for the military, but for consumer use, you can have a pretty strong level of confidence that you will continue to get that support. And we're just fortunate that the consumer level of technology has reached a point of sophistication where you don't feel like you're trading off, right? You're not losing something because you are no longer going in this very focused niche proprietary approach.
I completely agree. And I have said many times talking to various customers, we don't have technology problems so much anymore. The technology is there. We have endless compute power in the cloud. We have fantastic, realistic graphics. It's really now, for example, in the military, it can be sometimes waiting for certain people to move on, people who don't believe in game-based training, for example. There is a cultural shift that has to happen, mm-hmm. not just in the military, but in many serious game type applications. A lot of people still think of computer games as the annoying things that their kids play, the wastes of time, a little bit like my father, who I love. But you know, he always viewed my computer at home as this kind of waste of time, this box. I wasn't using my hands. I viewed it into, well, a future for me, an entire future. It was a portal into a career. And so it takes time for cultures to change. And we've seen that acceptance. And I've been quite proud to drive that change in many military organizations. I would say that the U.S. military organizations have always been forward-thinking. So I don't think you've had that problem here in the U.S., but in other countries, it's certainly been an issue.
I can imagine. It's so interesting that the convergence of technology was enabling this approach on a technical level, and it's the buy-in that becomes the bottleneck for certain militaries. That is really fascinating to me. It is somewhat understandable. I mean, I suppose if you are someone who hasn't had that hands-on experience, it can be difficult to imagine that it would have that level of beneficial effect. Heaven knows we see that in politics as well, right? Where we'll see politicians who perhaps print out their emails, then legislating tech, and you clearly get in the tech sector, you feel this very intense resistance to that because there's this gap between a person's understanding and the way things really are, and yet that person is still given the responsibility of perhaps legislating that area. So it's one of those parts of tech that I love to talk about, even though it's not, you know, it's not how tech works, but you have to take kind of this holistic view in order to understand why is tech the way it is now, and why are certain things in tech perhaps taking longer than you might have anticipated to get, you know, a larger rollout. It's because people are not like tech. That's way back in the day when I was first given the assignment of being the tech head writer for HowStuffWorks.com, which is where I started when I started podcasting. All of my coworkers were scared of tech. We were all English literature or English majors, communications majors, and everyone was scared of it. And I wasn't. And when people asked me why I wasn't scared, I said, well, because tech either works or it doesn't. People, that's way more complicated.
I agree. And I mean, there's a lot of people making decisions related to computer games that don't understand the medium. Mm-hmm. And that always drives me a little bit crazy as a gamer. And you know, my advice to parents, and I am also a parent, is to play games with your kids. Mm-hmm. You know, see what they're doing. Understand. And it doesn't just apply to computer games. It could apply to anything. Understand if what they're doing is a complete waste of time. Are they just consuming or are they creating? If they're playing Minecraft and they're building castles and they're creating, encourage them to do that. If they're modifying computer games like I was, encourage them to do that. Don't watch YouTube videos of other kids playing computer games. Like that is arguably a complete waste of time. I might get shot down for saying it, but that's just my opinion. And then in Australia, we have the situation where computer games are regularly being banned by a committee of people who I believe have never played a computer game because of they think they're too violent or and so on. And I find that very problematic as well. You know, so this technology is with us. It's here to stay. And we need to all make an effort to understand it. And I'm 42 years old and my daughter is doing things that is already kind of beyond me. The metaverse, for example, which we'll get to, I'm sure, I kind of rolled my eyes. But, you know, we can't do that. We can't be cynical. And these technologies are moving with huge momentum. And we need to understand them and grapple with that.
Well, and that's a great way for us to even segue to talk a little bit about the metaverse. And this is going to require a lot of extrapolation on your part. And so this is really us kind of batting around our understanding of what the metaverse is supposed to be. It's a little complicated because there is no firm definition on the metaverse. Generally speaking, I think the accepted definition is it's a persistent variation of the internet, perhaps it's something that is really focused on things like virtual reality or augmented reality as a way to interact with that persistent representation. You have persistent virtual environments where you can pretty much do all the things that you would do in the real world, but you do it online through this virtual environment, whether that's commerce, you're going to concerts, you're hanging out with friends, you're having business meetings, maybe you're touring an actual real world location, either for virtual tourism, virtual vacations, maybe you're virtually touring a house that you're interested in buying. Like, there are all these different potential applications. But the thing that I keep coming back to is that if, in fact, the metaverse is going to support all of these and more, it is going to have to be such an incredibly robust infrastructure to support that, that it's hard for me to get my mind wrapped around it right now. And since we were talking earlier about military simulations, and you're talking about simulations right now that can support up to 250 simultaneous human operatives, and then a few thousand more artificially intelligent ones, like, That to me is phenomenally impressive. It is also, at the same time, I would argue, probably a fraction of what most people are thinking of when they're envisioning the metaverse, right? Because they're thinking of Ready Player One or some other science fiction incarnation of this virtual world. So what is your kind of concept of the metaverse? What does that word conjure up in your mind?
Right. So my thinking about the metaverse and the military metaverse has been shaped by an article called The Full Potential of a Military Metaverse by Jennifer McArdle and Caitlin Dorman. And I do encourage people interested in this and how it might relate to the military to check that out. And it became very clear to me that people are talking about the metaverse versus art metaverse. And there have been metaverses for a very, very long time. Gabe Newell spoke about this recently in an interview that he did. And you know, if we have an online virtual world with the appearance of persistence, then that could be thought of as a metaverse. They quote Neil Stephenson, a sci-fi author from way back, and he says it's a series of interconnected and immersive virtual worlds that afford their users a sense of presence via agency and influence. And that was coined over 30 years ago. So this concept of this online virtual world, it's not new. But what's interesting about this is the idea of the metaverse, the idea that there would be only one. And this is an intriguing concept. Within the military, we've been connecting simulations together for 25 years using various wondrous technologies. We can connect a flight simulator to a first-person shooter, like what we build, connected back to what we call a constructive simulation, which is like Hearts of Iron, where there's divisions kind of moving around as icons on a map. And in the military, we've been connecting those types of things together for years. And what I think is going to happen over time is that we'll see the Microsoft metaverse, the Facebook metaverse, and then these things will begin to connect. Because unless they do, we're not actually achieving the vision of the metaverse. We're not actually reaching the promised land, which has a lot of potential, right? I mean, the idea, I think, is really, really intriguing. But the problem is going to be that these gatekeepers that within Web 2.0 sort of won the fight, so to speak, these centralized companies or companies that have all the data centralized, you know, Facebook is a portal onto the internet in some countries around the world, for example, they're going to need to somehow work together, or there needs to be an open source push that gains enough momentum to actually become its own thing that these big companies have to connect to. So when you think about the metaverse as an open architecture where there are different entities and interoperable servers kind of all interconnected via shared and agreed upon interfaces, then it becomes a very interesting prospect. So that's my thoughts about the metaverse. And, you know, I might talk a little bit about what we're doing in the military, just because I think that could be interesting. So to go from where we are today, the 250 players with 2,000 artificial intelligent units, to scale, we are using cloud technologies, and we are working as part of a big team on the US Army synthetic training environment. And they are looking at employing cloud really in new ways to achieve the kind of scale that the military needs for its training, but also what you would expect to see in the metaverse eventually. Using containerized simulation workers, we can scale up the number of artificially intelligent units into the millions. Because everybody's connected directly to the web architecture instead of being connected to a game server, we can also dramatically scale up the number of human participants that are connected into that military metaverse, so to speak. So when all the metaverse hype began, I was quite proud, especially of the US Army, who are already thinking ahead and have companies like ours on contract to solve these types of problems. I believe that VBS4, our current VBS, will be the final version that is sort of tethered to an old school game server. The next version will almost certainly connect directly to a web architecture. So you're seeing some really massive changes. And if there's one organization that could make a metaverse work for itself, it would be the US Department of Defense. And I think you're going to see almost a parallel development along with kind of Web 3.0 happening out here in the civilian world. And I think that's quite exciting. It's almost like a race.
Pete and I will dive further into discussions about the metaverse, some of the challenges we face both in the near and long term, and more after these messages. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
I think we can learn a lot of lessons through the way that the Department of Defense approaches this continual evolution of the military metaverse. I think those lessons are ones that will be valuable. I think because the military approach has a much more focused view on what the metaverse is and what its purpose is and what it needs to do and how it needs to do it, that these are all things that are incredibly beneficial when you're actually engineering it out, right? You can start to define your parameters. What are your deliverables? What are the things that you absolutely have to be able to do? How can you do it the best way that supports the most people at the same time? These are all things that are easy, not easy. These are all things that are answerable. But like, when I look at conversations about a metaverse, it's more of a general purpose metaverse. What I typically don't encounter are those kinds of easily identifiable objectives where you could see like this is something you can actually work toward, like an engineering problem you could work toward solving. And I see this could be the issue of the media too. I don't want to put everything on all the companies that are working on creating a metaverse. Obviously, they're not going to share everything that they're working on right now with everybody. It would be overkill, and no one's really certain which pathways are going to end up being the profitable ones. And I don't just mean profitable from a financial standpoint. And so there are a lot of reasons why I think this is, but the problem falls on me as someone who's just kind of passionately following developments in tech, is that I'm getting a lot of information about vague information about the destination we're heading, but very little about the steps that need to be taken to get there. Apart from the fact that, you know, you have people like representatives from Intel saying that in order to achieve a really robust metaverse that allows for things like VR and AR implementation, the tech we have is going to need to be 1,000 times more powerful than what we have today. Again, suggesting that if you want to support a large number of people in the same environment at the same time. And we've seen that sort of with VR right now, where I think Meta's Horizon Worlds supports maybe 20 or 25 people simultaneously right now. So obviously that would not be, that would not give you the feeling of attending like a massive concert for, I don't know, Metallica or something. I mean, it would feel great. Like, I can't believe Metallica's playing for me and 24 other people, but it doesn't create the experience of the promise of the metaverse. And so I think there's just this big disconnect between sort of the marketing speak and the hype of it, and where we actually are. And that to me is what I like to warn people about, because I fear that with that lack of clarity, there's a lot of opportunity for people to either get scammed or maybe just engage in speculation that is probably not the wisest choice, especially if it's, you know, you pouring money that you can't really afford to lose into something.
The thing to get excited about is Web 3.0 and sort of ignore all of the noise and potentially ignore what big companies are doing. So Web 3.0, it's almost a redesign of the internet around open technologies, like this concept of an open ledger, the technology that underpins crypto, and I hate saying it, but you know, blockchain. These technologies have huge potential, and you sort of need to take a long view, or you will get depressed, because in the short term, I mean, crypto and NFTs, I'm not going to invest in them because I believe in the short term they're kind of like a scam. It's pure speculation, and I think it's fact that NFTs are a scam. But you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater and ignore the potential of these technologies long term. And the Web 3.0 vision is really appealing, right? And it does go against, I think, the interests of these companies that want to control all the information. And host all the information on their servers and scour through that information so they own the data that they can sell to others. Web 3.0 is a reimagining in some ways of what the internet could be. You know, they call it the semantic web. It's this ubiquitous open internet that uses artificial intelligence to give you what you need based upon, you know, your browsing history and what you're doing. But it's designed to do this in a way that information isn't necessarily like owned by Google. And I don't know a lot about it, but the reading that I've done, I'm excited about because it's a vision that I think we all can get behind, right? And if enough people understand the vision and where Tim Berners-Lee, you know, the founder of the internet, wants to take kind of Web 3.0, then I think it has a chance. Personally, I think what you're going to see in the short term is the Microsofts and the Facebooks kind of doing their metaverses, pretending like theirs is the best, at the same time as there is almost a community-driven Web 3.0 metaverse that begins to take shape. I mean, I truly hope that's what happens because I don't want to have to, you know, access the metaverse through a single company. I want it to be like the internet, right? I shouldn't have to access it through Facebook. I should be able to just connect and there I am. And then if I want to contribute to that, I should own what I create. If I create a new house using whatever design tool is provided to me, the intellectual property of that house should belong to me. And that's what should be stored on the open ledger, which obviously is immutable, you know, and everybody can see that I created and own that house. So Web 3.0 is definitely worth looking at. Now, when it comes to NFTs and what's happening in the short term, I mean, there is an amazing, I mean, it went viral. I think it's Dan Olsen's The Problem with NFTs YouTube video. I don't know if you've seen it. And it's an amazing takedown of NFTs, but it's extremely short-sighted. Yes, NFTs are really bad right now, but the technology that underpins them is awesome. And so I do worry that people are kind of taking a position with a very short-term view when we should be talking about where we want to get to. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. I think, you know, I have repeatedly slagged off NFTs. Like I have, but it's again on the way that they're being dealt with right now, which is largely as this speculative investment / scam, depending upon the actual, you know, implementation. Some cases it's out and out scams where people are just trying to, you know, capitalize on the combination of the fact that there are a lot of people out there who are eager to see their money increase, and they have a large ignorance of what NFTs actually are. And when you have those things paired together, you've got marks, you've got targets for scams. So I have a pretty negative feeling for NFTs in their current manifestation. I can see the potential benefit of NFTs down the road, just as I could see the benefits of cryptocurrency if it ever emerged from being this speculative commodity and turned into an actual working currency. I just have never seen crypto really behaving like a currency. I've seen it behave more like stocks or, you know, investing in precious metals. That's the way people have treated it. And so it's like the intent of the thing didn't matter. It's how people interact with it once it gets into the real world and it becomes a totally different thing. So I agree with what you're saying. I just recently this past week covered the story about how Snoop Dogg acquired Death Row Records, then started to remove some of the albums and songs off of various streaming services because of his pronouncement that he's going to turn Death Row Records into an NFT music label and be the first major music label in the metaverse. Another move that I think I would say is perhaps a bit premature right now, but at the same time, I can see a world where the music industry tries to get behind the idea of an NFT approach as opposed to streaming or the classic download digital store model. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's certainly potentially, you know, it's a possibility with all this focus on the metaverse. I also agree with you. I don't want a world where a massive company has created the gateway to the metaverse, or I would argue even worse, you could have siloed metaverses that don't have any connectivity between them. You could have the Microsoft metaverse or the Facebook metaverse, which just kind of creates splintered internets. It makes me think of like back when, before Facebook dominated all of the social networks, you went to wherever your friends were. So like I was a MySpace holdout for a long time because I was out of college by the time Facebook came around. I couldn't get into Facebook when it first started because it didn't have a college email address. I was on MySpace and I was thinking, oh, this Facebook thing, that's flash in the pan. It's never going to be like, it's never going to stick around. But you know, it does create you either get into a scenario where ultimately these entities have to work together to integrate their interfaces so that you can pass between these, or you get to a point where no, they decide they're going to stick it out. They're just going to pummel the competition until they're the only one left standing. Neither of those are particularly good for the individual user. I also think that an open source approach would be ideal. Like having everyone agree, you know, it makes way more sense for us to all focus on open, interoperable standards so that we don't have this painful process where everyone's fighting for dominance. Nothing is portable from one experience to the other. And the consumer is just kind of left holding the bag.
I have a lot of faith in the internet. And you need to almost go one step below the hype, right? So you know, NFTs, speculative asset, lots of scams, bad. But the idea that I have data that everybody can see that data is mine, and it's stored forever on the internet and can't be deleted, it can't be changed. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of a cool concept, right? So I was reading about ARWeave or ARWeave, ARWEAVE.org, and they're trying to make it a little bit, make sense in the sense that you could store like an entire document, so to speak. At the moment, you can only store like a little bit of text, like a URL in the NFT. But what if you could actually store a document? What if you could store more data? And there are these initiatives that I'm very excited about that are looking at the problems and trying to solve them and do it in an open source way, right? Mm. So I'm really excited about that. I think that, you know, for the military, just kind of bringing it back to what the military is doing, you know, they're going to go a different route. The biggest problem with the blockchain approach is the fact that everybody can see the ledger, right? There's no concept of security. And one of the things that slows the military down in anything IT related is security, mm-hmm. for very good reasons, obviously. And there are very big contracts with certain companies for secure clouds and the like. So I think that figuring out where blockchain technology actually is useful and where it simply adds overhead and is not necessary is really important as well. And I think every internet user is almost obliged to do their research a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that people should sign do a training course in order to access the internet, but I guess it would start at school, but it would definitely help. Like everybody needs to do the training that my company makes me do, you know, twice a year, the anti-scam, anti-phishing training. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's sort of mandatory, especially for grandmothers. Mm-hmm. I think that would really help.
Yeah. Again, it gets to that target of opportunity for scam artists, right? Like ignorance is one of the biggest opportunities that cons have when it comes to pulling off their scams. The more, the less aware someone is of something, the less educated they are in something, the more likely you're going to be able to take advantage of that. And so, but that, I mean, we've also seen that in pretty much every security story that's out there, you typically, when you really get to the end of most, not all, but most computer security stories, you ultimately get to someone somewhere fell victim to a trick. And that's how the Hollywood version of someone trying to log into a server and typing in a password, getting two incorrect ones, and the third one works, almost never happens. You do have brute force attacks that occasionally happen, but they are pretty hard to do if you're talking about even semi-sophisticated security systems. It's far more likely that someone somewhere got compromised one way or another. And we can just apply that across the board for everything, like not just for basic computer security, but pretty much all like internet etiquette could benefit from people having that level of, oh, I understand what the bad guys are looking to do, like how they're looking to exploit it. And by understanding what they're looking for, I have a better appreciation for various processes. I know that if someone calls me up claiming to be from the IT department and they want my admin level name, login and password, probably it's best not to give it to them straight away. We've got a bit more to go with our look at the future of the metaverse, but first let's take this one last break. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
I love this conversation, Pete, largely because like I have been so kind of laser focused on the issues that I see with the metaverse that it often can be hard for me to step away from that and say, well, you know, okay, yes, there are problems that have to be solved before we get to that destination. But that doesn't mean the destination isn't worth going to. That's where I can kind of lose my way sometimes. I get so focused on, you know, worrying about big tech playing too large a role in this, or worrying about the scam artists who are taking advantage of people when there is a lot of excitement around this idea, or worrying about companies that might be investing heavily in a future, but without a clearly communicated pathway for how they want to get there. Those are the things that kind of worry me, just because I see it as opportunities for this to take longer than it should, honestly. But with you, talking with you, I feel better about that, because I do think that, you know, we are going to get there. The question is just like, how much garbage are we going to get to go through before we hit that destination? Hopefully by the time that we start seeing metaverses, like common use, general purpose metaverses, start to really take off, I'll still be interested and I won't have turned into a Luddite hermit who lives in the woods.
Yeah, it's very easy to be cynical about it, especially if you're like an older gamer. We've all seen Second Life. We've all played massively multiplayer online games. And the first inclination is to eye roll when you speak to someone who's just learned about the metaverse and they've never played a computer game in their life. But yeah, this technology, I mean, my advice to companies that are interested in investing in this area is to look at the problems that we're seeing in the short term, you know, the security issues, the problems with NFTs, and invent ways to solve those problems. And I mean, you probably end up selling your business to Facebook, but ideally contribute to some of these organizations. I mean, you know, I think that's the best thing you could do right now if you're kind of a tech entrepreneur. Personally, at Bohemia, we are looking at the terrain aspect. So the idea that a metaverse requires one of two types of terrain. Either it's a full-on fantasy land, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the internet is amazing for, and computer games are amazing for, just building these fantasy lands. But also there will be, in our opinion, a need for a really realistic virtual earth, mm-hmm. where you can kind of build your own house in the metaverse in the same location as your house is in the real world. So we are doing a lot on the terrain side. We have a lot of technology related to streaming terrain from the cloud and processing that terrain and procedurally enhancing it and getting that out to multiple different simulation engines. Obviously focused on the military, but it has applicability sort of outside the military as well. So I really do think this is an exciting area, but to get involved and just jump on the hype without kind of understanding, I mean, how many companies were selling blockchain stuff, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, with no real idea of what that was. You really do need to look at it. I think especially the tech investors are sort of smarter than ever, and even as I was sort of researching to talk to you, it became clear that it's just moving so fast. It is hard to keep up with it. There's no doubt.
Yeah, I actually talked to one of my coworkers yesterday, and I said, the weird thing that I'm going through right now, the weird realization I'm going through, is that, you know, for like 10 years ago, the big concept in tech, like the far off future concept of tech, that was a conversation that was just going, was about the onset of the singularity, this era where technology is changing so quickly you can't even define the present. And I said, here's the weird thing. Because I think partly because of the pandemic, which forced a lot of companies to go through very rapid evolution, they started to adopt practices and processes and technologies that maybe they had been considering, but perhaps was on like maybe a 5-year plan. And they ended up saying, well, we got to do it now because we have to be able to continue to do business in a world that's completely changed. And we saw such an incredibly rapid evolution that is continuing, because now the companies are saying, well, it doesn't make sense to go back to where we were. It makes way more sense to build upon what we've learned just trying to get through the pandemic. So it's a very exciting time. I said, it feels to me like we might be in the singularity now. It's, you know, maybe in the future we'll look back and say, like, yeah, no, that's when it began. We just couldn't tell because we were in it. But I feel like that's kind of where we are. It's not the science fiction version of the singularity. It's not like we're all, you know, playing Shadowrun for real and plugging directly into computers and injecting our consciousness into the internet. But it feels like we are almost in this cycle of such rapid change that just defining what's happening now is a huge challenge, let alone kind of projecting out what's it going to be in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, ignoring the noise is certainly hard. I mean, within my little industry, there's a lot of hype around hardware as well. Mm-hmm. So the latest VR or MR or AR headset. And for me personally, what helps is within my industry is to identify what we're trying to do. The heart of my business is training soldiers. Mm-hmm. Do soldiers need device X, cloud Y, in order to train? Will it make them train better? And so for me, I get the luxury of doing that assessment against any new technology that comes along within Bohemia Interactive Simulations. And it's been very interesting for me to see hype, even within military simulation, about, for example, VR headsets. VR hype ramped up a few years ago. Many, many computer games were created. A lot of game developers were very unhappy with the profits that they got from that because the market was so inundated with VR games. I think a lot of people were just like me. I bought an expensive VR headset. I played a game. I got a headache. I put it back down and went back to my PC. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because I'm 42 and too old to quite understand, but VR headsets were kind of a painful experience for a lot of people. Now, here we are today, and instead of just pure virtual reality headsets, we now have mixed reality headsets where we can, similar to Microsoft HoloLens, we can mix the virtual and the real world. It's a much more pleasant experience for the operator. You don't get a headache as quickly. And we're seeing for the first time, for example, pilots saying, oh, hang on, yeah, this could potentially work. Whereas up until 1 or 2 years ago, the pilots were saying, nope, unless it's a big dome with images projected on a screen, you know, I don't want to use VR. So we are beginning to see changes, but these changes come slowly. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't come quickly. And it's very interesting for me to go back and look at presentations from futurists in the past. I mean, I've been doing this almost 20 years, and you know, I think that the progress has been steady. Within our little area, obviously things like social media sort of exploded, and you never know when the next explosion is going to be. But for me personally, what I've done to focus our business is just how do we do our thing better? How do we train soldiers better? And if it doesn't do that thing, then it's useless or potentially useful for marketing. And that's about it.
And that's the sort of approach I want to see kind of adopted across the industry. I feel like with that approach, you're able to work toward that goal more concretely. You're more likely to achieve the goal than if you have a more vague definition and no one's really sure, one, what you mean. And even if they kind of have a grip on what you mean, they're not sure how to get there. It makes me think, I have a background in acting, and I once had a director jokingly give me the least helpful direction I have ever heard, but it was a joke where he said, Jonathan, could you act more? Which doesn't mean anything at all. like it doesn't mean anything, but it did make me laugh. And then later he gave me very concrete direction that was actually helpful. But that's the way I feel that a lot of companies are kind of taking this, or at least that's the communication. Again, I shouldn't project too much on the companies. A lot of this comes from press releases, which might be drawn up by someone who is working from bullet points, or it might come from the media where you've got, you know, another degree of separation from the actual source. I'm trying to be a little more gracious in my in the way I analyze the metaverse. Pete, I have to say, it has been a real pleasure to have you on the show. I could have you back and we could chat about computer games as much as you like.
I love computer games too. Yeah. They're amazing. I still play them. I think I'll be the guy in the nursing home when I'm 85 playing the computer game. You know, it's such an important part of my life. Everything that I have is a result of computer games and the amazing people that are behind them. So I recommend people play more games.
Well, out of curiosity, before I let you go, what's a computer game that you're currently playing? Doesn't have to be your favorite, but something that you go to.
So I just played Space Engineers for the first time.
Yeah. And
because I have a programming background, you can actually like program awesome inventions in Space Engineers. It's like Minecraft, but a little bit more for 42-year-old men, dare I say. So I love computer games that where you have to create, and I've really enjoyed that. I've been playing Star Citizen, which I do recommend people check out. It has come a long way. I've enjoyed it. I've played it for about 100 hours and it's been a positive experience. And so I used to be very pessimistic about their chances. Now I'm just kind of lukewarm. So we'll see where that goes. Just two more. Elden Ring.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's big one right now.
No, I have to play it. No, I love it. I'm a big fan of the Souls series, so I love Elden Ring. And then I have been playing the computer game that got banned in Australia, RimWorld. So I'm sorry to my Australians that you guys can't get that game, but it is fantastic.
Excellent. As for myself, in case anyone's curious, the game, my go-to game, because I can play a level and then like bounce off, Not Tonight 2. If you ever wanted to be a bouncer in front of a nightclub, it's kind of like Papers, Please. It's one of those games where you're like checking stuff against data that's in your hand. I know I'm not really selling it the best way here, but I really love those games. I was a big fan of Papers, Please and a big fan of the first Not Tonight. And this one, there's a lot of pretty heavy-handed commentary in it, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, we're spoiled for choice. The amount of it is amazing what's available.
Well, yeah, and if you dive into the independent gamer, like the stuff that's just being released directly to the internet, and like you go to a place like itch.io or something like that, it is beyond overwhelming to see that. Like, you're gonna be spoiled for choice when it comes to innovative experiences. Yeah, I'll definitely have to have you back. We'll have a wrap session about like computer games and the various eras and the standouts and things of
Sounds
that
awesome.
Nature. But for now, I should probably let you get back to creating virtual worlds and doing what you do best. Thank you again for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks again to Pete for being on the show. I think it's important to chat with folks who have a different perspective on topics. Particularly people who are kind of in the thick of things, you know, in something that's at least related to that topic. Pete certainly has, you know, tons of experience building out platforms that allow for numerous people to congregate in a virtual space. I don't have that experience, so getting his insight was invaluable. I'll likely have to do a future episode about Web3, Web 3.0, which is another tech concept that I have some concerns about. I like the idea behind Web 3.0. I think the idea is a very strong one. It actually, kind of the same way I think the internet idea is a very strong one, this giant communications network that democratizes so much of what previously had been siloed. However, I do have some concerns that what we're going to see in practice with Web 3.0 will effectively be the same old song played on new instruments. In other words, that some new parties will end up becoming the sort of centralized monoliths of that particular incarnation of the internet or the web. But, you know, that's another topic for another episode, and I'll probably reach out to someone who has more experience in that to kind of address some of my concerns and explain where I may or may not be off base. So look forward to that. I don't have anything firmly in the works on that right now, so it might be a little bit before I get it. But I really want to get my head wrapped around the whole thing, and just to make sure that the concerns I have are either merited or maybe that it's based off a misunderstanding, which is entirely possible. I don't magically understand everything right away. But in the meantime, if you have suggestions for guests that I should have on this show in the future or topics that I should cover on Tech Stuff, please reach out to me. The best place to do that is over on Twitter, where we use the handle TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.